Welcome back to Jules on the Hustle. I am so excited to tell you who my guest is today, because not only was he a beast on the football field, but he's a beast on 98.7 ESPN Radio and was a fellow Wahoo. You guys know how I feel about my Wahoos. Shout out to all you Virginia Cavaliers. Chris Canty is a former American football defensive end. He was drafted by the Dallas Cowboys in the fourth round of the 2005 NFL Draft. He also played for the New York Giants, winning Super Bowl 46 with them over the New England Patriots in 2011. In 2013, he played for the Baltimore Ravens. And like I said before, he played college football at UVA. While at UVA, Chris was a two-time second-team All-Atlantic Coast Conference selection. He led all-conference defensive linemen in tackles as not only a sophomore, but a junior as well. He earned his bachelor's degree in African American Studies. Currently, Chris co-hosts the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg radio program along with former New York Islanders goaltender Rick DiPietro and Dave Rothenberg on ESPN New York 98.7 FM. He's also a color analyst for NFL games on ESPN Radio. You can also see him appear regularly as an analyst for the show First Things First. Wahoo wah, Chris Canty. First of all, fellow Wahoo, how was your quarantine and how is your family handling it? How did you handle it? All that good stuff.
Well, I'll tell you, it was tough, especially early on in New York because it was the epicenter when the virus hit America. And so just, you know, knowing people that have been affected, knowing people that have lost loved ones, that's never easy. I mean, the virus hits close to home for a lot of folks, me included. And I think that let me know how serious this thing was going to be, the gravity of it all. And so, you know, the family has been safe. You know, my immediate family is doing well. My parents are good. Both of my brothers are okay. And my nephews are doing well. But that being said, this coronavirus pandemic hasn't been easy on anybody. And, you know, it's tough. We just try to do the best that we can and we try to keep moving forward.
Now, were you able to air DiPietro, Canty, Rothenberg, ESPN Radio from home?
Yeah. So I started working from home around the end of April. It just didn't make any sense for me to continue to go into the studio. And my bosses were really great about that. You know, they made the building essential personnel only, and a lot of the on-air talents were able to work remote. So I got to big up Tim McCarthy and Ryan Hurley and Jonathan Winthrop for all being on board and finding ways for us to do that. And it hasn't been easy for anybody, you know, continuing to put on shows throughout the pandemic when you don't have any live sports to talk about.
100%.
134 days without having any live team sports. And so we finally got that back last night with opening day with the Yankees and the Nationals. But it hasn't been easy for anybody. But the one thing that I will say is it's truly a privilege. It's a blessing to be able to use my skill set in order to provide a little bit of normalcy for some folks out there that are trying to wrap their minds around dealing with this pandemic.
Yeah, thank you to you and all the other people that report from ESPN Radio giving sports life kind of during quarantine. And did you find like that it was harder to come up with content? But you probably were able to dive more into history and stuff like that. Is that so?
Well, I mean, we did touch a little bit on the greatest of all times or the most iconic New York sports figures. But really, throughout this entire process, you know, we were just trying to you know, get our heads around what was going on and you know, think about the possibilities. Would we receive return in live team sports this year? You know, sports is what unites us. You know, Rick, Dave, and I came together because of our passion for sports. And so, you know, that's what we love to talk about. That's what we're, you know, we get emotional about. And so certainly having a chance to speculate about the different possibilities has been pretty cool. And that's really what's been keeping us going. So I have noticed throughout the pandemic, you know, we start to allow a little more of our personalities to show, and I think that makes our show better. You know,
yes, great point. Excellent.
As to who we are, and you know, it's been something that folks have embraced. You know, listening to our listeners respond positively toward that, I think that's affirmation for us. So I have to say that, you know, it's been great to have the support of our audience throughout this entire time.
I feel like someone like you that has obviously so much professional experience, it really shines through your insight and experience through playing professionally. You know, someone that, you know, that really loves sports but maybe hasn't played much in their life would struggle more during a time like quarantine. But for you, talking about it is second nature. It's like what you... Sports is like what you breathe, sleep, and eat. So, I mean, that's excellent. It takes a special person. I actually, last year, I went on Han Solo with Alan Hahn, and we discussed Serena Williams and the U.S. Open, the 2019 U.S. Open. You guys have quite the setup there. I love it. The podcast, dude, is so cool.
It is pretty cool. We got a pretty good crew, too. Like, the team at 98.7... It's like a family.
Absolutely.
You know? And I have to attribute that to, you know, our bosses hiring some really good people. You know, not just the on-air talent, but the guys behind the glass, the board ops, the producers. I mean, I could run down all the names. They all know who they are, but they all do a tremendous job. And they're really what keeps us going. You know, they're the ones that make sure that they provide the infrastructure for us to put together the shows. Like, they're the ones that make it all go.
They're the ones. I met some of the producers when I actually also went to Anita Mark show last year as well. So I got to meet like some of the guys and girls that do the production at ESPN. They work so hard. They do the nitty gritty stuff. So shout out to them. They make it go.
Exactly. Yeah. They do make it all go. I mean, we're lost without those guys. And so, you know, just it's a really good team. Everybody understands their role, and we all play off of one another. We all work with one another. There's really a good synergy in the station, and it makes it a really great place to work. You know, when people listen to our radio shows, you know, I think that comes across. Like, we all kind of, you know, work together in terms of being able to push the different themes throughout the different sports teams in New York City. And then we're able to incorporate some national storylines as well. But I think when you listen to one of our shows, you can tell, like, okay, this is, you know, a continuation of the conversation that was happening with the show prior. And that's really what we want it to be.
I love that. That's a great point. You can really feel that. It's not like you just, you know, entered and started. It's, you know, a continuation from a previous conversation seconds ago, before the show starts. So I wanted to talk about your time at UVA a little bit. You studied African American studies. So like, what led you to that major? That's pretty cool.
Well, I tell you what, some bad grades in econ is what led me to that major. So my freshman year, I was set on being an economics major.
Wait, you're what year?
My
You mean your first year, Chris?
There you go. My first year, exactly. I forgot that.
UVA language, come on.
UVA language, you're absolutely right. So my first year.
There you go.
My first year, I was set on being an economics major, and I took 101 and I got a C+. Mm-hmm. And then I took it again in summer school and got a B-. And my mom said, baby, you need to find another major, because if you took the same exact class, you only did a half a letter grade better, you got to find something else to do. So I decided to fall back on African American studies. And I hate to frame it that way, but that's kind of how it happened. You know, it was awesome. And a lot of the things that I learned were lessons that are applicable with today's climate, and knowing the fight for equality and the fight against racism in this country. A lot of the things that we're fighting against were things that I studied when I was at UVA. So, you know, it was awesome to be able to find something that I cared about in academia, and actually really focus on that and get my degree in that. So it was really cool.
Were the grades a little bit better than in academics?
The grades were a lot better. I mean, I was academic all ACC.
There you go.
My third year, excuse me, at UVA. So it was certainly one of those things. Like, I liked it. I was interested in what I was learning about. And anytime you're interested in something, you're not going to have more attention to it. You're going to spend more time on it. And certainly that was going to help with the letter grades.
You see, I studied media studies. That was the name of the major. When I went to UVA, I wanted a major that was more like journalism, communication. But media studies was the closest thing to it. I personally thought the major was too much about learning about the history and the progression of media rather than just getting right to it, writing articles, maybe getting in front of the camera reporting. So while I loved my time at UVA, the major maybe was a little off from what I would have preferred, I guess you can say.
I got you. Yeah. I understand that. I guess when you're going to get involved in something, it's good to have a little bit of the background of it.
That's true. So it's a good point.
A better understanding of the nature of the industry that you're getting involved in. See, I mean, you had the benefit of studying it at UVA. And for me, going from playing to jumping straight into the media, it was a steep learning curve. I mean, uh-huh. I didn't know what I was doing. I was completely immersed in this thing. I mean, they gave me the keys to having a midday show, and I really quite didn't know what I was doing. And, you know, I just had to try to find myself, find my voice. And a lot of that time I spent trying to study other shows and seeing what other hosts' approach were in terms of being able to format shows. And I think that was where I began to take my first big step forward in terms of improving as an on-air talent. Just understanding how to format a show and then understanding what my voice was, you know, and then being able to attack it that way. So I think that's important.
That's a great point. Thank you.
Exactly. Anytime you're trying to find your way in a given industry, having a little bit of the history of it always helps in terms of being able to find your way.
That's very valuable, very deep. I'm going to have to re-listen to this podcast and dissect that over. So for me, I've been injured since the beginning of last year, so beginning of 2019. And I love doing media, but something about doing media and watching other players play tennis, it makes me miss it so much. Do you feel like, you know, you wish you were the one out there sometimes when you're reporting?
You know what? A lot, this is going to sound funny, but no.
No. Hey, that's.
I realize where I'm at now. There's no way I can go out there and compete with the younger guys. I'm 37 years old, and, you know, I got all of the toothpaste out of the tube when I played in the National Football League. Like, I rode until the wheels fell off, and I enjoyed my time.
Yeah.
And so when I see the guys reporting, I reflect back on what that feeling was like and all the different things that you experience in training camp and the camaraderie, you know, the dog days of summer with two-a-days, all of those different things. And so I appreciate my playing career for what it was, but I don't want to go back and revisit that. I'm all set. I like what I'm doing right now.
Well, that's a clear indicator that, you know, you've accomplished everything you've wanted to accomplish. And I think that's like the perfect and ideal time to kind of walk away from this, not walk away, but wrap up the career. You've done everything you wanted. You won Super Bowl 46 with the Giants. So, I mean, you made it to the tippy top of it all. Like you
made it right up there. I don't know if you can see.
Oh, look at that. I love it. Oh, that's great. Oh, very nice. Glad we have this on video.
Exactly.
So I wanted.
I never wanted to have any regrets, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like when I went to UVA on scholarship, the one thing I said is I wanted to make sure I got my college degree no matter what. You know, that didn't mean that I didn't dedicate myself to getting the most out of my athletic talents, and I absolutely felt like I did that at UVA. And when I got to the National Football League, with the same approach, like I want to make sure I get the most out of this opportunity. And even though there are some things that I would do different if I had it to do over again, I think overall what I got out of football, I'm thankful for it. I feel like I gave it my best effort. I didn't cheat the game. I didn't cheat my teammates.
Mm-hmm.
And I can live with that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't have any regrets. And I think that's how you should try to lead your life, right? Whatever it is that you're doing, go after it, be passionate about it, and whatever happens, happens. You'll be able to live with yourself and live with the results if you throw yourself fully into it. If you don't do that, if you hold back a little bit, I think that's when people, you know, start to second guess themselves or wish they had something to do over again.
100%. And going off of what you said, it makes it easier that way, being able to be happy for other people's successes, because you know you gave 100% of what you had and you did everything you wanted to do. Now you walk away being able to be happy for others and encourage them, really. So it's great. So I wanted to talk a little bit about your background. You were born in the Bronx, and then you moved to North Carolina when you were 15. So I was listening to Bart and Han a couple of weeks ago, and they were saying, I'm just going to give you one line, and I want you to tell me what you think of this. Sports break barriers. Off the top of your head, how does that sound to you?
It's absolutely true. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you might have some misconceptions about a group of people or about a particular individual, but when you have an opportunity to get in the locker room and interact with that person, you know, it changes things. You know, when you have the chance to have that relationship, I mean, when you personalize it, it just absolutely changes things. And so to that point about sports breaking down barriers, it absolutely does. I wish that America functioned a lot like an NFL locker room. Because you got guys from all different types of backgrounds, all different socioeconomic situations, all races, all religious beliefs, and yet somehow, some way, we're able to come together and work together and sacrifice for a common goal. And I just feel like there's a lesson to be learned in that based on where we're at in this country right now. If we look to how a lot of sports teams operate, there's something to be learned from that.
Preach. Nailed it. I love that answer. So actually, you know, when the whole George Floyd thing had happened, I put on Instagram a post just about sports, how sports break barriers, because I was so inspired. It was, Bart and Han were discussing it, and I did this post about how sports break barriers and how, you know, when I was at UVA, was the only time tennis was considered a team sport, because otherwise it's individual. But at UVA, you play with your team. You know, you have teammates from all around the world, from different backgrounds, different cultures, different races. It didn't matter, though. Like, all that mattered was that we were trying to achieve one common goal. Chris, let me tell you how much backlash I got from this post. People were reaching out saying, you know, the fact that you're comparing your time at UVA to the situation is absurd. And what they didn't understand was that I wasn't comparing it. I was just saying that sports does something very special to us, which I wish kind of was more applicable to the entire, you know, world or our whole entire situation. I don't know. What do you think about that?
No, I get exactly where you're coming from. Right. But here's the thing. You can't make everybody happy. And in this time, there's heightened sensitivities and people are taking sides and they're drawing lines. And it's one of those things where if you're not all in on the Black Lives Matters movement, then it's going to be hard for you to prove yourself an ally in that situation. And anything that's inclusive of opinions outside of that are deemed a part of the problem. And that's one of those things that we have to be careful about, because ultimately in the fight for equality and the fight for racial justice, this is going to be a situation where everybody's got to get involved. Everybody has to be included. We have to find ways to get other people that haven't been a part of the fight a part of the movement. And so I guess from my standpoint, it's just a matter of trying to find commonalities. And I think with that post, that's what you were trying to do.
100%.
Sometimes it can be misconstrued, but that shouldn't discourage you from continuing to try to do your part in advocating for equality and advocating for racial justice.
I was, you know, trying to spread a positive message and kind of explain how sports does kind of send that positive message. But yeah, that's a great points you make. And this is a quote I made up. The only colors that matter in sports are the ones on a team's jersey. Because I feel like that kind of,
I would qualify it this way. I would say the only colors that should matter.
Matter.
The only
okay.
colors that should matter, because the reality is that we all see color. That's we right. all do. And the goal is not for white Americans to not see color, but to recognize color and recognize the value in that. Recognize the value in our perspectives, the value in our contributions, and recognize our personhood. That's what we're fighting towards. And I know that that's not something that's easy and that history is working against us. You're talking about four centuries of oppression on this continent for black and brown people. There's a lot that we have to fight against, but right. I think the first part of that is the acknowledgement of it in order to move forward. And I think that's what's happened in the wake of George Floyd's death, that more Americans are now in tune with the reality of what black and brown Americans have been facing for a really long time.
May I ask if you've experienced racism in your life or on the football field?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And it's interesting that you pose that as a question, because I think we should be open about those things. We're all trying to educate one another about our various experiences. And so I don't want you to be, I guess, overly cautious when having these discussions. You shouldn't be.
I want to educate, and I want to educate myself, because not only the listeners, but I want to educate myself, because that way I can help make a difference and spread better messages and, you know, do
but
better things.
Important thing, in that process of educating yourself, you're going to make some mistakes.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to encourage you to do is not to be afraid of making those mistakes, because they're going to happen. Yeah. So it's okay. But to answer your question, yes, I've experienced them. It's been on multiple occasions, but the one that stands out for me was when I was a teenager and I moved down to the Carolinas. I was sitting in the car of the parents of one of my friends. So we had all went to the mall, and I went with them, and his parents got out of the car and they went in the store, and we decided to sit in the car, me and my buddy, and listen to music. Mm-hmm. And as we're listening to the music, there's somebody that comes by the car and they're screaming at us. They're saying the police are coming to arrest us and all of this different stuff. And we don't know what's happening. Mm-hmm. And, you know, before too long, police officers did arrive on the scene. They pulled us out of the car. They cuffed us. They slammed us on the hood. And we didn't know what was going on. Turns out they thought that we were trying to steal the car. And it was the car of my buddy's parents who had went in the store. And so they came out of the store, everything got cleared up, but that was one of those things where you recognize that people look at you differently because of the color of your skin. And that was completely unfair. Yeah. And that shouldn't be, you know, one of your first interactions when you're coming of age with law enforcement.
No.
You know, a situation where you're on the wrong side of racial profile.
That's so terrible. I'm sorry to hear that. Now, how did you kind of handle that?
Well, it was an awakening, right?
Yeah.
You just became aware that things were different, and so you try to conduct yourself accordingly, you know, and it's just one of those things where you try to stay out of those situations where things could potentially go left. And I know one of the things that my parents always said is, no matter what happens, listen to the police officers. They're always right. Do whatever you got to do to get home. Okay. And then once you get home, if you felt like you were wrong, you can fight that battle at a later date. But don't try to fight it while it's actually happening, while it's unfolding, because it could cost you your life. So there are just certain
kind of like protocols.
I don't want to say rules, but there are certain unspoken rules about how you're supposed to conduct yourself as a black man in this country. And in order to stay safe, you have to operate by those rules. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you are literally taking your life in your own hand. And it's scary, and it shouldn't have to be like that, but that's the reality of where we're at as a country. And until we can work past some of these misconceptions and some of these stereotypes, you know, we're talking about more lives being compromised. So I hope that what happened with George Floyd creates the kind of urgency in every American that Black and Brown Americans have been having since the inception of this country.
Yeah. There definitely has been an increase of urgency since the George Floyd thing happened, whether it's over social media or the protests. It feels positive. And
say the George Floyd murder, because that's what happened.
Sorry, the George Floyd murder. Yeah.
It was the murder. And I don't want people to lose sight of that, because we paid a terrible price for our eyes to be collectively open. It was a terrible price. A man lost his life. A family lost a son. A daughter lost her father. The loss of his life wasn't in vain. It has to mean something. And so that's why I feel like it's important for us to be able to continue with the movement, to capitalize on the momentum that's been created in order to create long-lasting change.
Yeah, and there's so many murders that happen that aren't even, you know, publicly known. So it's so important that a change is made. Now, last question about this. What change would you like to see with racism, maybe in sports or in that regard? Yeah.
Well, I'd like to see more representation of Black Americans at the top of organizational hierarchies, owners, general managers, head coaches. There are only 4 minority coaches in the National Football League. Something about that has to change.
Yeah.
I mean, when I came into the NFL, it was double that.
Wow.
At some point, that has to change, and we have to have more people in positions of power. And I know that's not going to be something that's easily done. But again, I think that has to do with the comfort level that owners have with hiring minority candidates.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with having opportunities to have interactions with potential minority hires. We have to do our part in order to facilitate that happening. And so that's what I would love to see.
It's a great... I didn't even realize that there were only 4. That's unbelievable. Maybe starting with our New York Knicks. I'm a huge New York Knicks fan.
Yeah.
Are you a fan of the Knicks?
Mr. Dolan has done a good job of having Black men in his organization, right?
That's a good point. With Woodson.
Yeah, Mike Woodson has been there. Steve Mills, who's still
absolutely
on the board. Scott Perry is there still as the general manager. So Mr. Dolan has done a pretty good job of hiring Black men and being able to promote diversity within his organization. Now we hope that other New York sports franchises follow that lead, right?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
So
I read that you are the founder of the Chris Canty Foundation, dedicated to enhancing the total development of youth in communities by utilizing the platform of sports to effect positive change in the lives of children through mentoring and educational programs. What inspired this incredible program and foundation?
Well, I just wanted to start something that would be able to facilitate me giving back to the community.
Yeah.
Right, because there's so many people in the New York area that have poured into my life and actually gave me the tools in order to build my dream. And I just wanted to find a way to pay that forward. I can't pay those folks back. So the best thing that I can do is honor the sacrifices that they made by trying to do the same for youngsters in our community. And that's what the Chris Canty Foundation is all about.
Mm-hmm.
So through our partnerships with our partner schools, our community corporate partners, we just try to find initiatives where we can be impactful.
So how can people listening to this podcast help and, make a difference? Go on to the website?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Go to chriscantyfoundation.org, and we're pretty good about updating the website and making sure that people know what we're doing in the community, who we're working with, and what we're trying to accomplish. And so I always say this, whether it's my foundation or it's another organization, you know, find some way to get plugged into community service. Everybody has something to give, whether it's your time, your talent, or your resources. Make sure that you give it so you can be a part of solutions rather than just sitting around complaining about the problems.
And feeling bad Exactly. I feel like I'm guilty of it. Everyone's guilty of it. We love feeling sorry for people. We love feeling bad for ourselves instead of, you know, being proactive and trying to make a difference or help others. So I think that's a huge point that you make there.
Yeah, and I mean, here's the thing. I oftentimes find that when I'm, you know, volunteering, I'm actually getting more out of it than what the people I'm trying to help are getting out of it. It's just, it's a tremendous blessing. I think that it's another one of those intersections with relationships with people from different backgrounds, and you find that you can learn a lot. And so for me, I just try to find ways that I can be a learner, and that's one of the avenues that certainly that's been the case. My volunteerism has led to me learning a lot about life. And so that's why I always encourage people to get plugged in and find a way to give back, you know, figure out what your lane is and then do that work. Everybody's got work to do, so we all got to get involved. But, you know, I think the toughest part for a lot of folks is just figuring out exactly what that looks like for them. But I don't think that's anything that anybody should be afraid of. Do the work, figure out what it is, and then get involved.
You make a great point, because not only are you helping others, you're learning not only about yourself, but you're learning more skills. You're educating yourself, educating others. So it works hand in hand. You're helping them and you're helping yourself.
100.
Well, Mr. Canny, thank you so much for joining me today. This was so educational. I have to say, this is the most I've learned ever in a podcast. Like, I forgot at some point that I was even like interviewing you. I felt like I was just getting some like mentoring or something.
No. Listen, I'm never shy about wanting to help out a fellow Wahoo. So thank you for inviting me on your podcast. And I want to wish you the best of luck in your playing career as well as your media career.
Well, there you have it, Chris Canty. Now, how educational was that? Like, I truly meant it. I learned so much through this podcast, through this interview, and I loved his take on how sports break barriers. Like, I barely gave him any context, and he had such a great answer that just made me think so much and encouraged me to make a difference. And I hope it encouraged you guys, inspired you to help out, to send messages. It's okay to make mistakes. We're all gonna make mistakes. But the most important thing is to be involved, to be part of the movement for your community. As always, guys, thanks for tuning in to Jewels on the Hustle. We'll have another podcast coming out next week. As always, follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Jewels L Baba, at JuelsElBaba. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast so you know when I post my next episode, and give this podcast a 5-star review if you enjoyed it. I will see you guys next time on Jewels on the Hustle.